This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Look right down any crowded hall. You'll see there's a beauty standing. Is she really everywhere or a reflection? One always calls out to you, the other's shy and quiet. Could there be two different girls who look the same at Sweet Valley, Sweet Valley High? Sweet Valley, Sweet Valley High.
Welcome to Pi Beta Alpha, the podcast in which we explore the strange and terrifying world of the Sweet Valley High TV series, episode by episode. I'm Anna Carey.
I'm Karen Moynihan.
And this week, we find out why loose lips sink yachts. Oh. Now, the title actually makes kind of sense now we've watched the episode. Initially, I thought it was like a pun, you know, using loose lips sink ships to refer to rich people in the matter of row, row, row your yacht.
Yeah, okay. I see that.
But there is actually a yacht accident referred to.
There
I'm
going
to guess it sank.
It was, it was more on the nose than I thought it would be.
Yes, same. Well, as usual, we will dive in with the blurbs. And I'm going to start with Wikipedia. Let's see how accurate it is. Devon Whitelaw's arrival in Sweet Valley causes a stir. True. Mm. Jessica and Renata battle it out for him. Also true.
Yes.
Elizabeth finds out that his parents died under mysterious circumstances. True.
Yes, okay. So far, so good.
And Devon himself may be responsible. So true. And then it says, based loosely on book 138, what Jessica wants.
Okay.
So how are we doing with the... Amazon.
Well, as usual, we are to the point and no extraneous detail whatsoever. Jessica and Renata compete for a mysterious new student.
I mean, accurate.
To be fair, they've been accurate so far, apart from there was one tagline where they said Jessica instead of Elizabeth or something, and it was like Jessica and Todd going on a romantic date. Like, wait, what?
Whoa.
But other than that, they just keep it so short, there's no room for error, really.
By the way, I'm going to have to check now, just after, you know, that blurb saying it's based on this, on this book. So there was a comment in YouTube that said, is this true, that Devon Whitelaw was actually introduced in the TV series before the book. So it basically said this episode came out in 1997 and the book didn't come out till 98. So let's see.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, Loose Lips Sink Yachts, according to Wikipedia, aired September 16th, 1997.
Okay.
Now, I just opened the list of Sweet Valley High books as I was talking. What Jessica wants, June 8th, 1998. Devon Whitelaw is the new student at Sweet Valley High.
Oh my God. So he was actually in the TV show before the books. That's mad. Wow.
Yes. This is mad.
Unprecedented.
Oh no, hang on.
Oh no.
Hang on.
Oh no.
No. It's kind of the same.
Okay.
So Lila's New Flame, book 135, refers to Devon Whitelaw has just lost both his parents and tries to find other relatives he can trust. But that's like a month after the TV series.
They must have had him in the works or something, or had him in like the story Bible maybe, that they were able to be like, this guy's going to turn up. I wonder. That's all very close together though, isn't it?
Isn't it? And then in November, so the next book comes out in November and it does say Devon Whitelaw heads to Las Vegas to find a long lost uncle. But then he doesn't turn up in Sweet Valley High till book 138, What Jessica Wants.
Okay.
So that's really a year. Like that's 9 months.
That's mad. Okay. So he is actually in the series, but then doesn't turn up in Sweet Valley High in yeah. the storyline, we'll say.
In Vegas for some reason.
Vegas, okay.
And there's like a huge gap between books. So he's in a yeah. book that comes out in October 97. He's heading to Vegas in November 97. He's looking for an old nanny in December 97. And then there isn't another book till June 98. And then he's in Sweet Valley High.
Fucking hell. Okay, that's really weird.
Wow. If anybody has some inside knowledge on this, this is fascinating stuff. Because we know they retconned Shred into that Batman saga. It's like, oh, by the way, you just had a cousin called Reginald, but we're going to call him Shred.
It's totally like a fine. Baby. Don't double check anything. Baby Shred has been born.
Wow. I mean, maybe there's something going on here, but I get the impression that like Francine was not particularly happy with the, yeah, TV, with the TV series. So I don't know, she'd be maybe, I don't know, feeding characters in, saying this character is going to turn up in a month in Vegas.
Yeah, that's weird. I can't really get my head around that or what the kind of processes were here exactly. Or like, yeah, what's going on?
It seems like way more joined up thinking than we usually get.
This is this, yeah. It's very unusual.
Well, he's here in Sweet Valley now, in the TV series. It's September 16th, 1997.
Here we are. It is 1997, everybody.
It's 4 days after my 22nd birthday. And I'm still younger than some of the cast.
Oh, that is gas, how true that is.
I know. Oh, that was not a joke. That was just a statement of fact.
Actual fact. Yeah.
But I have to say, this is a very fun episode in many ways. And even if it hadn't been, it would be worth it for one moment at the very end, we will not spoil for you.
No. We will get to it. But yeah, super fun episode. It's always nice when they're kind of back in school because, yeah, it is this thing that they do now where a new series opens with them somewhere else, either just at the beach all day or in Mexico or this time Brazil for some reason. So now we're back in SVH, back in the back in the corridors, the hallowed halls.
Indeed. Yeah, it's like this whole episode is pretty much in school and in the I was going to say the Dairy Burger, the Moon Beach.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, just the classic locales.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's kind of nice.
Yes.
So we begin in Sweet Valley High. And it's a whole new school year, or is it? Who knows?
Oh, who knows? They're acting like it is, but I mean, they're not fooling anyone.
Well, Renata, decked out in quite a frilly ensemble, is lamenting the fact that she has been in Sweet Valley High for 10 whole minutes and nobody has praised her yet. I mean, was that not all of us in school in the 90s?
Teens, they're so relatable. I just, you know. Yeah, she's so stylish in her outfit and nobody's even said as much to her. So she is most puzzled. She doesn't understand Americans. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yes. So, yeah, she's strolling along with Jessica wearing a very middle-aged sort of silk neck scarf. Now, I know Lila used to sport a neckerchief, but this outfit looks like somebody's mother in a golf club.
Yeah, it's like this big white kind of, it's like a jacket or a blazer or something. And that and the neck scarf, it's all a bit too, divorcee who's into her golf type thing.
Exactly.
It's not giving Jessica Wakefield.
No. But it does become relevant later. There's no explanation for why she's dressed like a middle-aged divorcee, by the way, but the outfits play the role. In the story. So Jessica deadpans that everybody's just blinded by Renata's jewellery, and Renata defends herself and says she's hardly wearing any and holds up her wrists to reveal she's practically weighed down in gold chains.
It bangles all the way down those wrists and loads of rings, but she's like, yeah, this is hardly any, apparently, according to her standards anyway.
Well, they find Lila. And Lila is in trouble.
Yes, her new locker assignment is unacceptable because apparently she has been placed smack in the middle of Nerd Gulch.
And it really is a locale. Apparently, Jessica has never stopped there before. How big is the school? She can feel the coolness draining right out of her. And we see that she is indeed surrounded by nerds.
Oh, God. And it is that classic thing. They've all got the thick rimmed glasses, the mm-hmm. pants that are slightly too short. They're all wearing like braces or like suspenders and check shirts and holding molecules and shit. I don't know what. There is one girl nerd, actually, that I did appreciate a bit of girl nerd representation. She just has like loads of pencils stuck in her hair.
She does. There's actually a girl nerd and a boy nerd later on who are dressed extremely stylishly. And I was like, what counts as a nerd? She's dressed better than half the cool kids in this town.
I know. Not dressed like a middle-aged golfing divorcee. It's like, good for you, girl nerd.
Indeed. So, Jessica says there's always next year, but Lila's like, oh, it's easy for you to say. You're in the Upper West Side hallway. And Jessica preens and says she's got a view of the boys' locker room. And Lila, like, again, Shirley on top form, says, you have a view.
She is bereft of this news. And also, Shirley's hair looks so good. Like, it always looks great, but there was just something extra lovely about it in this particular scene. It just looked so full and shiny and amazing, and I was quite jealous of her lovely hair.
She looks great in this episode. Her outfits are cool too. So anyway, she says she'll handle it herself. And as in the background, the nerds extra nice molecule. They've got like those little model things of molecules that you used to see in like your school science lab. She takes out her mobile phone.
Yeah, so she's all business. She's like, it's Lila. And then goes, is Daddy there? Because of course it's Daddy to the rescue. So she's trying to get a hold of George to sort this thing out for her. So Renata watches all this bemused, and she's like, ask Jessica, is she always like this on the first day of school?
But Jessica says, she's like this every day. So Jessica leads Renata through the nerds. And it is kind of hilarious. They're sort of looking around them on all sides, like in terror. And when they pass through the valley of the shadow of death, she says, you just had your first near dork experience.
Yes, Renata's very grateful for her for getting her out of that situation. It's all very dramatic and overplayed. But yeah, so they carry on down along the hallway, and Jessica hands Renata a list of guys that she can go out with in Sweet Valley High.
It's very short.
It's very short. It's a glorified post-it, basically.
Yes.
Renata's like, what is this? Because Jessica has her own list, which is like a full-on A4 page, and she tries to get a look at this list, but Jessica's like, no, these guys are off limits. Renata kind of sees the list that Jessica has and dismisses two of them straight away. She's like, well, I went on a date with this guy last night, and I know he was really boring or something. And then the other guy she points out.
He had the breath of a burro.
I thought that was the second guy.
the second one had the brains of a burro.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I did think, is this another time where she's using Spanish words and she's meant to be Brazilian and speaking Portuguese? I did look up in case, I want to be fair. So they do apparently say it, but really the Brazilian Portuguese for a donkey is a jumento.
Oh.
So I don't think anybody bothered looking up a single Portuguese word for this. I think they were just like, Portuguese, Spanish, there's probably enough crossover.
Yeah, it's not great.
Oh no, and this isn't the last not great moment.
We're in for a full series of Renata. Choices of words here. So yeah, I think we're just going to have to roll with some of it, unfortunately.
Well, apparently Renata would not wrap fish with this list of alleged hunks. And Jessica is very defensive and says she worked on it all summer and it's the best that Sweet Valley has to offer. But not for long, because electric guitar plays and who should enter?
Oh my goodness, this is so funny. Like, I love that the subtitles here just say rock music.
Well, they wish.
Because he comes around the corner. He comes around the corner like the Terminator or something. It's gas, because there's this like hunky dude wearing like a leather jacket and sunglasses. He's walking in slow motion coming down the corridor. It is so extra.
So extra. And He is played by newcomer to the show, Manly Pope, who is married to our beloved Enid in real life. Obviously, not the show.
Although you wouldn't put anything past this show. Teen marriage, why not? The books have been there.
I do love that the person who ends up married, like, together with the hunk in real life is the dismissed sidekick Enid. Oh, delightful.
That is great, yeah.
Devon Whitelaw for Rishi's E strides down the corridor, and while watching him, Jessica and Renata, in unison and in slow motion, just rip up their lists of guys and kind of smirk at the newcomer.
Yes, because there is a new guy in town. All bets are off.
Sure is. So we cut to a classroom, and Lila still can't get a hold of her dad, and she's sitting in the back, and one of those little sort of like what we had in college lectures. We did not have these in our schools, like the seat with a built-in table.
Mm, oh yeah,
your school didn't have them, did they?
No, well they had like some classrooms had like the really really old-fashioned version that like might have been something our parents would have sat.
Oh, in, like, know, a built-in kind of bench. And
yeah, that you could lift up the top of it, all that kind of thing. So certain classrooms had those, but for the most part, no, it was big tables.
Yes. So she's sitting on her own in one of them and surrounded by nerds, and they're sort of leaning over to talk to each other when she wails down the phone, "They're closing in," which is pretty hilarious.
Poor Lila, she is under pressure in this episode.
Surrounded by nerds on all sides. So the newcomer comes in, and the teacher greets him and says, "Oh, Devon Whitelaw, you must be the new student." And he goes, "You must be the old teacher." And everybody's like, "Ugh."
Like, yeah, he's so rude. Like, out of nowhere. It was very uncalled for, Devon.
So rude. So Jessica and Renata urge him over, you know, to come over here. And Winston is sitting between them and is like, "Come over where?" And Devon is an absolute prick to Winston.
He is, like, just straight off the bat, it's like he's doing Todd's usual thing, which is being rude and surly. So he comes over, he just like looms over Winston, who just immediately gets out of the seat. And Winston is like, "I'm not moving because you asked me to. I'm moving because you're bigger than me."
Delivered them very nicely too.
Yes.
So the teacher doesn't say a word about this, but a minute later, Dylan puts his feet up on the desk of the kid sitting in front of him. Again, just an absolute prick move. And the teacher chastises him. Dylan ignores him. And the teacher says, "Look, this is my classroom. You got to show up in time and keep your feet on the floor. And if you don't, I'll have to ask you to leave." And Dylan just takes this as a challenge.
Yeah, he's just like, "You know, I'll save you the trouble." So he just gets up and leaves. And again, the extras are doing their best in this episode. So gasp, because they're just like, "Wow, I can't believe he's walking out."
Enid, his future real life spouse, looks concerned.
She does. Absolutely.
By this bad boy.
He's really giving it like so much on the bad boy attitude of it all. But yeah, so Jessica and Renata watch this happen. They kind of look at each other. Jessica's like, "He was so rude." And Renata's like, "And so primitive." Then they look at each other, and in unison, both of them go, "He's mine."
Nicely done. So we cut to Renata's locker. She's... I guess she's meant to be touching up her makeup, but it just looks like she's looking at herself in her, like, you know, in a hand mirror and sort of going, "Ooh," smirking at herself.
She is basically just pouting into her little tiny compact mirror.
Yes. So Jessica walks past with Lila and says very loudly that Dylan has a metal shop class after lunch. And Renata's ears prick up at this, and she scampers off to Jessica's delight. Jessica smirks that Renata didn't stand a chance against her, and then says, "Who does?"
Yeah, so she's set her up, but then she spots Devon over at his locker, so she strides over and introduces herself. And Devon's like, "Oh, that, you know, your name sounds familiar." So Jessica's like, "Oh, you've probably heard of me. I'm popular." She's like, "Actually, I'm very popular." She's being like just full on Jessica Wakefield here. It is great.
Full on.
But Devin then pulls out this like little pink teddy bear from his locker and he's like, so this is from you then? And there's a little note on it that says, I can't bear to be without you. Love, Jessica. So she is horrified to see this and she's like, what? No, that is not from me. But Devin just kind of looks at her and this little neck scarf that she's wearing is the same kind of like pinky purpley colours that this teddy bear is. And he's just like, nice scarf, just hands it to her and walks off. So Lila sidles up to her and is like, oh, looks like you've been set up.
And Jessica snarls, Renata. And then we cut to the metalwork, I guess, room. And Renata is being forced to weld something and realizes Dylan is, or Devin isn't there. And she snarls, Jessica.
It's a great little cutaway with the meat going, Jessica, Renata. It's very Newman.
It is. Well, later, both rivals rush to the Oracle office and Jessica asks Liz if she's working on her new faces at Sweet Valley High article. So I guess that's carrying over from the books.
Yeah, well, we had it for Cheryl as well, remember, because she wanted to interview her when Cheryl was being all standoffish and rude to everybody when she arrived. It's like these new students are always just so rude on their first day.
Yeah, they really are. Like, let's hope Devin grows on us the way Renata or Cheryl did. Say, Renata's growing on me too. Dodgy choices aside, she is fun.
She is.
So apparently Liz knows nothing about this newcomer. His file is totally empty. And Renata's like, oh, a man of mystery. And Jessica's unimpressed. It's like, you call yourself a journalist. But Liz is doing an internet search on him. Now, you would have had to be making front page news as a teenager for there to be anything about you on the internet in 1997.
Well, you know, case, she's justified. So if it shows you.
I know. Well, I guess it's the same as, you know, Librarian Paramore, their dark web LexisNexis Infomax skills.
Exactly.
So Jessica picks up the list of questions Liz has for her interview tomorrow. She's not impressed.
No, she reads them out and she's like, where were you born? What are your life goals? She's like, oh, this is not what inquiring minds want to know. So she points out that, you know, she has to ask him the important questions, such as what's his favourite shade of blonde? And then Renata pipes up and asks, or if he prefers a fiery Brazilian with hot Latin blood in her veins.
Good Lord.
So Jessica's rolling her eyes at this and my nose were just like, yes, so not you, Renata.
No to all of these things.
But they're really annoyed that Liz isn't taking this seriously. So Jessica can't believe that that her own sister isn't taking this whole thing properly seriously and says, you know, dating is what I do. Don't you care about this at all? And Liz is like, no, not really. Like, why the fuck should she?
And Jessica snaps, you call yourself a sister? And then she leaves and she drags Renata out behind her. And I'm kind of loving their frenemy vibe. It is different from the Lila and Jessica partners in crime frenemy vibe.
True. Yeah, it's another flavor of frenemy dynamic, which you know, only Jessica Wakefield could just have frenemies rather than friends.
Very good point. So then Enid, who's actually been in the room the entire time, unusually silent.
She was busy doing her computer search.
Well, her search has been fruitful because she's found quite a newspaper story.
Yes, she finds a headline that reads Whitelaw yacht mysteriously sinks in flames. So apparently there's a subtitle that says that the son, who's the heir to the fortune, is a suspect in the tragedy. But then, apparently he was cleared of all charges. But Enid's like, oh my God, he torched his parents' yacht. And Liz tries to point out that he was cleared of the charges. So like, maybe don't jump to conclusions such as this. But yeah, very dramatic headlines, it turns out, associated with the Whitelaw name.
Yes. I mean, I don't really know why, apart from, I guess, her love of the truth. Liz is very defensive of Devin from the start.
Yeah.
Like, she also takes it for, you know, the news that he was on trial for murder by arson very much in her stride. She doesn't seem even surprised by it.
No, she's really, you're right, actually. She really does just seem very unruffled by this revelation. Yeah. She's just like, yeah, but he was cleared. It's fine. Enid points out that they did an episode about him, apparently, on America's Most Suspicious.
Yes, where his neighbor said that he was quiet and he liked to read. And Liz is like, so? And Enid's like, that's suspicious. So Liz urges her to give him a break. He lost his whole family. And Enid's like, well, yeah, they left him a fortune just as he planned. And Liz makes a skeptical Enid promise not to spread her crazy, unfounded theories around school. And Enid says her lips are sealed.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to the moon beach.
We do. So there's a gang of everybody around the table, and Enid, like, we've just cut to her saying that she won't say a word, and then smash cut to Enid full flow saying, so then this Devon guy sets the yacht on fire, swims to the shore in the dead of night, watches it sink, and then collects his huge inheritance. So, like, she is immediately spreading this whole thing around. Although it was in the newspaper, to be fair.
She hasn't really said anything that isn't.
I mean, she is adding her own little bits of flavour to it, like him, it being the dead of night and him watching it sink and all.
Yes.
And making him sound possibly more sinister than needs be. But yeah, she's given it loads in her retelling of things.
So Maddie is scared of this newcomer, but Todd says he hopes it's not like when Enid, this isn't a case of mistaken identity, like when Enid thought her neighbour was the Unabomber. And Enid's like, he was always delivering packages. And Todd is like, he was your mailman. So, Enid has heard nothing from this.
No, like right now, like in this day and age, she would fully be a proper like true crime girly, wouldn't she?
Oh, 100%. She'd have a podcast and everything.
She would, and all the Sweet Valley Murders, like she'd never run out of material.
Oh, that's true. She's had a ringside seat for quite a lot of them.
God, that's the Sweet Valley reboot that we need. And it's kind of the one that we almost got, actually, because it was meant to be about Enid, wasn't it? Like trying to figure out some kind of mystery where Jessica had gone missing or something. Oh, give us the true crime Enid story, please.
Give it to us. Let us write it if you won't do it.
Yeah, we'll take care of it. We've got this.
Seriously, can you imagine? They wouldn't know what hit them if they got us on board. You'd be bringing in deep cuts every 5 seconds.
Like, and then Carl the Orderly is going to turn. What? Who are you talking about?
Well, Liz comes into the moon beach just as Enid says she knows that Devon is, why do I keep calling him Dylan? They're basically both the names that a lot of characters like hunky boys were called in the 90s in TV.
Yeah, good hunk name, isn't it? Dylan or Devon. Yeah.
Kind of interchangeable. Anyway, Liz comes in as Enid is saying Devon is a cold-blooded murderer. And when she sees Liz, Enid adds, allegedly. Then she's like, she didn't mean to tell them. They just dragged it out of her. And Maddie is like, I just asked if I could have one of your pickles. But they're all kind of gossiping about Dylan now.
Yeah, or Devon.
Devon, oh my God. Okay, I've just written his name as D in all my notes, which is, in retrospect, a mistake.
There you go. He's not established enough yet to warrant an initial.
True, clearly. Yeah,
so Winston then chimes in and says that all he knows is that this guy pulled him out of his seat and threw him across the room in school that day. So Winston is also kind of embellishing the truth somewhat here.
Yes.
So it's all getting a little dramatic, and Liz is just like, okay, this whole thing is completely getting out of hand. And Todd agrees. He's like, look, don't you lot have anything better to do than gossip about Devon Whitelaw? And Jessica pipes up, you know what? He's absolutely right. Does anyone want to gossip about Renata instead?
Well, Winston defiantly says, if Devon comes into the moon beach and tries to order Winston around, well, he'd better watch out. And then, of course, Devon is behind him and orders a burger. And Winston is like, would you have some fires with that? I mean, fries.
Oh, God. Yes. And again, great delivery here by Winston, because he's getting all panicked. He's like, sorry, it's you know what? It's on the boat. The house.
Oh.
So it's one of these things. He just keeps digging further and further and getting more panicked and frightened looking.
It is painful. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's painful for him.
Yeah, he's not having a good time, but we are.
Yes. So Devon stomps off and Todd then bans, "Well, you showed him." And Liz urges them all to give Devon a chance. And she wants to talk to him. But Todd says, "No, look, I'll go." And Manny offers backup, but Todd turns him down.
Yeah, but he's made the offer now. So Enid is really impressed. And she's like, "Oh, you are so brave." Manny's looking delighted with himself. Also, this whole Devon thing, it's pretty much exactly like Sam being introduced, isn't it? Where it was like, he also had this like shady backstory, only that storyline it was like Jessica being the one saying, "Give him a chance, you don't know the truth yet," all this kind of thing, whereas now Liz is the one defending him.
Sam has left Sweet Valley city limits, so he is forgotten and will never be mentioned again.
No, but it's just, it's almost like everyone else, like his whole like intro storyline, where it's just like everyone judging him and one Wakefield standing up for him.
This is true. And also he's kind of wearing like a motocross jacket.
He is, yeah.
Kind of encouraging the comparison. Mm-hmm. So in fairness to Todd, he's actually being nice. Like he goes into the pool room and invites Devon to play a game of pool. And Devon just turns him down and he's pretty rude because Todd is genuinely being friendly and not, you know, surly and aggressive. But I think the post-Rod Berman Todd is definitely showing his softer side.
He has mellowed, hasn't he? But again, this whole pool thing is exactly Todd when he came back from the summer, or like, and he was all surly and mean at the start of the second series.
That's
and he was
true.
He was like grumpily playing pool and wouldn't play with anyone except for Cheryl, because she just kind of came along and didn't give a shite about anything either. And the pair of them were just sort of grumpy together playing pool. So again, it's like this is all like templated from earlier things, but we're just putting Devon into it now as the grumpy guy.
This is so true. Wow, they are really just recycling things at this stage.
Yeah, and it's even in the same pool room. So it's like, wow, we're not even moving locations now at this stage.
Oh no. You don't expect them to build another set now. Come on.
No. Okay, fair enough.
They can barely get like enough sets to fill the regular quota. They can't start adding extra pool rooms.
You're right. There's only one pink hat for every girl in Brazil. So we need to be reasonable here.
Adjust expectations accordingly.
Okay.
So Devon says, "Oh, you're getting on my nerves." And Todd quite rightly says, "You've got a bad attitude." And Devon goes, "Ooh, attitude, a three-syllable word, not bad, sporto." And Todd is like, "People are saying stuff about you, and I'm beginning to think they're right." And completely justifiable. And Liz comes in and sort of pulls Todd away, and Devon stares moodily into the distance.
He doesn't care what anyone thinks.
Well, we cut to what turns out to be the next day, but I actually thought was like 10 minutes later.
Same.
But Devon is sitting outside the Moon Beach. He's reading the paper, and Winston gives him a burger, and Devon's like, "Is it well done?" And Winston's like, "Oh, it was very well done. It's scorched." And then he realizes what he said. So he slaps Devon on the back in a kind of chummy way, and Devon just turns on him.
Poor Winston, he's like, "Oh, no offense, right, bud?" And like gives him the sort of like pat or slap on the back.
Yeah.
Devon just turns and he's like, "Did you just touch me?" And Winston nearly falls over himself trying to back away. He's like, "Oh no, it was more of a graze, really," and then just runs away. He just does not know what to do with himself.
He's rightly terrified of Devon, who's just going around picking fights for no reason, wherever he goes. Yeah. So Devon goes back to reading the paper, completely ignoring the burger, by the way. And then Renata struts up and sits next to him and tells him, "Oh, Devon, we have a sacred bond."
Oh, God. Yeah, I was like, where is she going with this? But she goes on about how it transcends all others because they both have money. So Devon is just like, "How do you know so much about me?" But she
doesn't really know that much. She just said she knows he's rich, which, you know.
Yeah. But she's playing coy anyway. And she's like, "Oh, that'll be our little secret." But then Liz comes up and she is not impressed because she's been looking for Devon because he bailed on the interview. But when she kind of comes storming up, Renata just sees Liz coming and she's like, "Ugh, the brainy one," and just leaves. She's like, "No time for this one. At least Jessica's fun."
Well, Liz, even though he blew her off, wants to hear Devon's side of the story, but he says, oh, I love my parents, end of. And she's like, okay, you know, I'm just doing my job as a journalist. And yes. Then he is such a dick about the Oracle, because it turns out that's the paper he was reading the whole time.
I know, I kind of judge him a little bit for not just like reading the Sweet Valley News, to be honest, because it is the Oracle. Because when she says that she was just doing her job and she's a journalist, now it is pretty funny to have someone turn to Liz and say, you call this journalist?
I mean, understandable. However, it is a school newspaper.
It is, to be fair, but it's always funny when someone picks apart Liz's journalism. But he reads out a headline from the Oracle, for it is in fact an issue of it, where apparently the cafeteria tater tots are now 30% more soggy.
Well, Liz says she's not going to bother him again and storms off. Yeah. As dramatic guitar plays and Devon smiles.
I was kind of surprised by that. But yeah, he looks kind of happy when she's storming off. So it does now start to feel like he just enjoys winding them all up, to be honest.
I mean, can't really blame him for
just
that.
Kind but of he is, fair. Yeah.
He is being a prick, though.
He is. But just this was kind of an unexpected, because usually they just continue to look surly and look off in the distance. But it just, yeah, there's more to him, I feel like, than our usual surly guy.
We've had so many.
There's so many.
Well, we cut to school the next day and the teacher says that their lab project is due on Thursday and they'll be paired up for it. So, of course, he pairs Liz and Devon, and Liz rolls her eyes and Devon looks quite happy. But when we do hear the other people who are being teamed up, we hear that a Miss Pierce is being pushed with a Mr. Connolly. Now, Connolly sounds a bit too Irish to be allowed into Sweet Valley High. But Miss Pierce, surely, Caroline.
Oh, surely. I know, because I was watching all the other names as they popped up after that. But like, yeah, that was the only one. So it could well just be a coincidence. But we're choosing to believe Caroline Pierce is lurking there somewhere.
Well, especially based on what happens later in this episode.
Interesting.
So we cut to Lila's locker and the nerds have put a poster of Einstein on it, and Lila gasps, oh, there's vandals.
Yeah, because when she rips down the poster, there's a big E equals MC squared in marker on her locker door, and her delivery of vandals here is so fucking good.
It's so funny. Just the use of the word vandals. I don't know why it made me laugh, but... So, and then to make the joke even funnier, she calls George on her mobile again and is like, oh, you know, it's getting worse. They're putting pictures of creepy old men on my locker.
Yeah, apparently she tried being nice to them and then turns to yell at a nearby nerd. She's like, would it kill you to wear pants that reach the tops of your shoes? And then turns back to the phone.
Those are the two really stylish nerds. Like the girl nerd especially is wearing an outfit that would have been, it's like a sort of bias cut striped skirt and a little top that was entirely on trend in 1997. Yeah. Much more so than Jessica's outfits throughout this episode.
Definitely. Yeah. But yeah, after yelling at that nerd about his pants, she then turns back to the phone and she's like, no, not you, Daddy.
Well, we cut to Liz. She's bitching about having to do the project about having to do the project with Devon to Todd. And apparently he's coming to her house and Todd is like, and it doesn't even feel like he's being jealous. He's more like, oh, fuck, are you sure you want him knowing where you live? Because he's clearly a psychopath.
Yeah, but he wants to come over later as well, just in case. But Liz is like, look, it's fine, relax. But again, yeah, it is nice that it's not Todd jumping into jealousy mode. It is just like, oh God, are you going to be okay?
Well, Jessica struts up to Devon, who's at his locker, and is like, dinner? Yes, I'd love to. Shay J?
Yeah.
Around 8, you know, basically, I'll see you there. And she says that she doesn't care about the story about his parents. People talk about her all the time. And can you blame them?
Yeah. So Devon does just kind of smile and he's like, all right, so tomorrow night. So Jessica heads off, absolutely delighted with herself. And then Devon spots Renata further down the corridor and he's like, hey, Renata, got a second? And she looks up delighted. But clearly he is up to something.
He is, and maybe he's dazzled by Renata's extremely shiny sort of PVC outfit. She's a symphony of shiny plastics.
It's true, yeah. Shiny and feathered and big patterns. A lot of loud outfits from Renata, and I'm into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite Jessica-esque. So, you know, no wonder they're sort of weird kindred spirits. Yeah,
definitely.
So we cut to the casa where Liz is trying to study on the couch, and then Jessica runs down wearing a crop top and striped sort of clingy trousers, again pretty 90s, and puts on the TV to watch Lifestyles of the Fit and Fabulous. Liz is not impressed.
No, she complains that she's doing homework, but Jessica says, that's okay, you won't bother me.
I did like that.
Me too. But Liz is just, she's really annoyed. She's like, look, I'm trying to work on this physics thing. Devin was supposed to come over ages ago. And Jessica kind of interrupts her. And she's like, wait, Devin coming here? He can't see me like this. Liz is like, yeah, okay, fine. You look great. Jessica's like, yeah, I know. But he already saw me in this outfit.
The way she delivers the yes, I know, again, great comic delivery.
So funny.
So she has to change. And Liz is like, well, you know, I'm pretty sure he's a no-show because he's already an hour late. Hmm. But then the doorbell rings and Jessica runs away.
So when Liz opens the door, it is, of course, Devin. So straight away, she's just completely unimpressed, just giving out to him. She's like, look, just because you don't care about your grades doesn't mean I have to get an F. So she's just, yeah, just giving out, because like, where were you? Like, am I supposed to do all this on my own? But he's just kind of smiling and amused, and he's like, are you finished? And then hands her the homework, I guess the assignment. He's already done it. She's like, what is this? And he's like, it's the project. So yeah, so it's done, and he actually did do the work. But Jessica then comes in and does this great, oh, Devin, I didn't see you there. She's now wearing a completely different outfit. It's this great like halter neck kind of red dress.
And Devin is like, big night out. And Jessica literally says, oh, this old thing. And does a hilarious sort of coy turn and looks over her shoulder. But Devin says, you might want to lose the price tag, which is hanging off her new frock.
Comedically huge price tag, like swinging like a pendulum behind her.
But he says he'll see her tomorrow. So we cut to a fancy restaurant, and Jessica, who is, you know, I think anybody can wear whatever they want. This is not an appropriate outfit for a fancy restaurant.
It didn't feel right. I mean, it feels very Jessica, but it's more like she's going to a party more so than this is a fancy sit down dinner. Yeah, it's like this little kind of animal print two piece, like it's a tiny skirt and the little kind of, is it a
tiny crop top?
Yeah.
I mean, it basically looks like a beach outfit,
but it's more, yeah, party at the beach type of, maybe
snow
beach
leopard.
Disco. Let's go beach disco for that outfit. But yeah, it just wasn't quite right for a restaurant. But when she asks for Devin Whitelaw, the guy kind of like points her to a table where Renata is sitting.
Yes, resplendent in sort of gold velvet. Mm. And she reveals she has a date with Devin, and Jessica snarks, did he know? But then she's like, hang on, did he make dates with both of us? And Renata was like, no, there must be some mistake. But then a bottle of water, very generous, I guess they are underage, allegedly. Yeah. A bottle of water arrives at the table, courtesy of Devin, with a little label on it. And Renata says, he has played us for the fool.
Yes, that boy is full of the devil, she pronounces.
Yes. Jessica feels stupid and says, no one can know our shame. So they vow to keep this all a secret. And then they, rather delightfully, do a toast to Devin. And Jessica says, the first guy we ever fought over. And Renata, genuinely hilariously, says, may he not be the last. Oh, they agree, a truce.
I love it, a little truce. But also, there was a great moment just as she was figuring all that out, where Jessica goes, this will be our secret, except we won't tell anyone, because I love Jessica's definition of a secret or something that you tell everybody. She's being very specific here.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that. That is excellent.
Yeah. It's because she just delivers it so like throwaway. It kind of took me a second as well, but I was like, oh, that was very good.
Well, then we get the best moment of this episode, and I have to say one of the best moments of the entire series so far.
I think it's a good payoff considering us and our desperation for references and things that are related to the books, and when people's names pop up and we're like, why couldn't they have used a proper Three Valley name?
Oh yeah.
It's vindication.
Well, they sure did, because we cut to Sweet Valley High, where a happy Lila reveals she's got a new locker in a desirable location. And she looks around, reveling in the soft lighting. How does this girl work? Anyway, the soft lighting, the clean air, the clean skin. And then Jessica asks, how did you get Amy Sutton's locker anyway?
Oh my God. So good. Yes. Lila then says that apparently her dad told Principal Cooper that there was a mistake with the locker assignments. And yeah, Jessica wonders what happened to Amy. And Lila just shrugs. And right as my notes were about to say, is Amy Sutton the Maris of Sweet Valley High? Because she was mentioned a couple of times. But that was all that we'd get from her. And then the unexpected happened.
It sure did. Because we cut to Nerd Gulch. And we see a blonde cheerleader of appropriate age, because you might remember that Amy, we got a glimpse of Amy Sutton in the pilot, and she looked about 35. Yeah. Well, this is Amy. This is like 100% right for Amy. Hair's a bit long, but you know, I'll take that. And she's making her way through Nerd Gulch in sort of dawning horror as nerds advance towards her.
Yeah, like they're being friendly in fairness to them, but they're like, hi, Amy.
They're making like the Vulcan sign, like the, you know, split finger sign.
Oh my God, oh, poor Amy. She is quaking in her little cheer outfit and just looking around her in horror. The nerds are all delighted, giving her this Vulcan sign, saying, oh, look, a newcomer. And Amy screams like she's in a horror movie.
Oh,
fucking great.
It's a full-on long horror film scream. It is amazing. It was like, we did get a heads up that something in this episode was going to make us happy.
Correct. Completely accurate. Yes, I think it was Marty McFly had said under one of the posts about the last episode, just saying that she'd watched ahead and we were going to be delighted. And I was like, oh, like that could mean a lot of things, to be fair, because we're always looking for something. But like, oh my God, I just never thought it would be actual Amy Sutton delivering a full-on Scream Queen performance among nerds in her cheerleading outfit. It was fucking brilliant.
Truly was. So we cut to Winston. He's standing at a doorway and he's clearly been turned down for a date by an extra. Who we hear say, dream on. But then Devon barges into him and knocks him over. And Winston is terrified, understandably, because he thinks that Devon is going to like beat the shit out of him. And is like, you know, don't do it. I'm a bleeder. But then Devon helps him up. As Todd approaches.
And in fairness, Devon has like a smile, like he was looming kind of weirdly for a few seconds, but he does smile at Winston and go, look, relax, come on, and goes to help him up. But of course, when Todd rounds the corner, he just sees Devon looming over Winston, who was like on the ground. So it does look bad. So he rushes over and makes everything worse.
Of course. He says, take your hands off him. And he shoves Devon away. And Winston's like, oh, no, look, just leave it. But Todd is still enraged. And Enid hilariously says, Manny, we should do something. And Manny's like, let's do something later. They're meant to fight.
Yes, because of course a crowd has gathered to see what's going on here. And yeah, Todd is just really aggro and like shoving Devon around the place. But Winston is trying to explain that actually he was trying to help him. But Devon has just had enough of everybody. And he's like, look, let him think what he wants. It's fine. But everyone around here does. There's only one person around here that cares about the truth. And then he stomps off.
I mean, Devon, you have gone around being an absolute prick to every single person you met. So
to be fair,
I think some of this is of your own making. I don't want to blame, but like kind of. Do.
Yeah, a little bit.
So he stomps off, as you say, and Todd shouts, it isn't over, Whitelaw. And Jessica turns to Renata and says, he thinks I care about the truth. And Renata says, are you yoking? Yes, she does pronounce it like that. Don't even know if that's how they pronounce a J in Portuguese. Who knows? It is kind of how they pronounce it in Spanish, but I think that's what we're baselining. Basing this off now. But yes, she says, are you joking? He's talking about me and Lila looking absolutely adorable. They're just sort of looking between them. And Renata says, he would say that you're blocking my view of Jessica. Sorry, I'm just looking at my notes now. And as I say it, that makes no sense.
No, it's Jessica says that. Yeah. Because Renata's like, he was talking about me. And Jessica's like, the only thing he'd say to you is you're blocking my view of Jessica.
thank you for making that joke make actual sense.
There you go. It was in there somewhere.
Lila reminds them that they're friends. She thought they were friends now. And Vanessa agrees that they are and says, keep your enemies close and your M&Ms closer. And Jessica says it's too dangerous for them not to be on the same side.
Yeah, so they kind of link arms and turn and walk away. But it is then revealed that each of them has a sign stuck to their back. So Jessica's sign reads, I love nerds. And Renata's one says, my jewelry is fake.
Oh, Jessica and Renata. I hope Lila isn't feeling too left out by this.
I know, because Renata has kind of, it was very much, it was like a Lila Jessica storyline, this kind of like competing over boys and stuff. So Renata has kind of slotted into like the Lila role, it seems like, but hopefully not too much. Yes. I do enjoy Renata, but I don't want Lila to get elbowed out.
Yes. Though when you think about it, like most of the Lila Jessica stuff isn't about individual boys. It's usually about some sort of status thing or like, you know, an outfit or a party or, you know, it's less about individual crushes.
Mm.
But yes, we'll keep an eye on this. Yes. We are a bit worried.
We'll watch with interest.
Yes. So we cut to a classroom and of course, Liz and Devon have got an A on that test. That, like, to be honest, if I was Liz, if somebody just left me hanging and then was like, oh, actually, I've done all the work anyway, I wouldn't be thrilled.
Well, no, because she was already studying all evening and trying to figure this thing out and wondering where the fuck he was. But like, I suppose she's just relieved that she hasn't failed this fucking thing because of him. So, because she does say, look, it was mostly all your work.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I hate to say this, but you're actually really good at this. Just a bit backhand.
They were all so rude. Like, seriously, no manners. So Devon says, you'd be surprised. I'm good at a lot of things. And then they smile at each other for what feels like about 5 years.
Oh my God, so long.
The credits roll.
They do. But like, he does, the thing is, he's much better looking when he smiles. He should smile more.
Yes. It's like all these boys, where they're just glaring at people. It's like, it's quite off-putting.
No, because even it was there at the very end when he was smiling at Liz, I was like, okay, I'm actually warming to him a bit. Because as usual,
he looks charming then.
He does, yeah. Because they do just bring in these guys and they're really surly and rude. And we're just like, ah, we hate them. So it's like, just, okay, clearly there's like a tough exterior going on here with Devon. But there is a bit more to him than that. And in fairness, he actually is like a good looking, relatively age appropriate casting choice too, because so often it's like the hunk is just like some guy that's looks like he's got four kids and a mortgage. So
yeah, no, he's
nice
an age appropriate hunk.
So it's unusual as well for Jessica to chase after a guy who actually is good looking.
Yeah,
and
would
be a suitable like 90s heartthrob. Like we had it with AJ and now we have it with Devon too. So it's like, okay, the casting is improving somewhat.
Yes. What seldom is wonderful. So, Pi Beta Alpha siblings, what did you think of Loose Lip Sync Yachts? Were you as thrilled by the appearance of Amy Sutton as we were? Do let us know. We are on the SVH podcast on all social media.
Exactly. You can send us an email at svhpodcast@gmail.com as well, though.
And as usual, we are most active on Instagram, where Tizaloon made the very good point about last week's episode that I love that the same dramatic music gets played, regardless of whether someone is in a coma, has been kidnapped, is thinking about jumping off a cliff, or is asked by a long-term partner to consider having sex.
It's so true. It's like all of the different situations get the same soundtrack. It's like you get emotional guitar, you get emotional guitar. Everyone just gets that emotional guitar strain. It's great.
I mean, now you even get it if you just walk down a corridor. So like the, you know, the bar has been set quite low for this season.
Whatever your emotional turmoil, we've got just the thing and it's the same sound as everything else.
Well, Maria Teresa Biblioteca located the Rancho Bonito.
Oh my God, yes. She said that she's 95% certain this episode was filmed at the Mission Inn in Riverside, California. Do a Google image search and you'll see. And we did. And it absolutely 100% is that.
100%. It looks gorgeous.
Oh my God, it looks neighborhood. So nice. Oh my God. It looks lovely. And it's, yeah, it is exactly where they filmed it, definitely. Because like the same fountains and staircases and everything. It's fucking gorgeous. It's an absolutely fab looking place.
Yeah, that circular courtyard. I love it.
Lovely.
Well, to my great delight, You started tagging yourself and you know how much we love that. So Princess Fiona is an ogre started off by saying, tag yourself. I'm Ms. Photocopier, George Fowler's secretary. I'm seriously pissed off that I spend more time talking to Lila than he does. He does not pay me enough for this shit.
Amazing. Wretched Chinchilla said, I am Liz's virginity. I'm being saved for marriage. Probably her 10th year as a high school junior.
She's feeling a bit wild.
Sister Betty Confetti, who hoped that Ms. Photocopier was having a torrent affair and will take George to the cleaners for workplace harassment, tagged herself as, I'm the owner of this incredibly fancy hotel who apparently made the presidential suite into a fucking dorm room to be shared by multiple guest bookings. It's just how we do it here in Spanish speaking Brazil.
Pippi Ann Shirley said, I'm the hunkiest lifeguard in Brazil, which is saying something. And my handsomeness is so stunning, it cannot be shown on TV lest it blind the unawares.
Katie Longstreth said, I'm the KFAS station manager forcing Miss Credits to chaperone these kids because we all know they've no adults in the home who'll take responsibility for them. And oh, Hughes from Nihon said, I am my Brazilian in-laws who would definitely have thoughts about the representation of their country in this episode. Please, Hughes from Nihon, let us know if we're being too harsh on their use of Spanish words. Maybe some of them are shared loan words between the two languages, but wouldn't put it past me if they just like had her speaking full on Spanish the whole time and actually don't know that they speak Portuguese in Berlin or in Brazil.
Anything is possible.
Socially awkward skeleton spoke for us all when she said, the scream I scrumped at the New Kids on the Block line being said to Manny.
Oh, that was so satisfying though, wasn't it? It's like, oh, one of those lines that really hits differently in retrospect. Great.
Princess Fiona is an ogre made the very good point. Does Renata become Madame Renata in Return of the Evil Twin?
Oh my god. We never made that connection.
Is she older than time?
She might. She's laden down with jewellery and that seems to check out for fortune tellers. I did like, we put up the little clip of the montage, which also had Jessica putting ketchup on her arm instead of sunscreen. But as Poetry 180 pointed out, she almost used sunscreen, which is so unusual for a Wakefield. So nice to see an attempt. True. An attempt was being made at least.
Yeah, that's unusual. Okay, fair enough. Like at least, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah.
She'll finally there. Start using like factor 15 at
she'll,
some stage.
She'll work her way up to the Hawaiian Tropic. Yeah.
Sister Betty Confetti said, here's something I never wondered about when reading these books, but I was so young. But what is with the attitude to sex? Most people I knew as a teen started having sex around the age of 16. And if they didn't, it was because they hadn't yet mastered personal hygiene or social norms, not because they were afraid of it being some huge and intense relationship changer. Is this a regional thing? Are Californians intensely puritanical, or are Australian teens fallingly loose of morals and pants? Now, I have to say, Ireland in the 90s, it would have been very unusual for somebody to have sex at 16, I feel.
Yes. Yeah.
And part of it was, I think, just a general fear.
That,
lack of opportunity, because quite a lot of us, if you were a girl who fancied boys and vice versa, you were almost certainly in a single sex school and most major regions. Now, since then, a lot of schools have gone mixed and a lot of community schools are mixed, but definitely in, like, you know, cities at the time and even in some smaller towns,
in smaller towns it's probably more likely that it'd be a mixed school if you've got a smaller population.
Yeah, that's true. But like, my cousins lived in Kells in Meath, which is not huge, and there was like the boys' school and the girls, like one boys' school and one girls' school. But I think we definitely possibly thought it would have been seen as something quite big, but everything else in between, zero to full on penetration, was not seen as a huge deal. So maybe that's the difference, I think, because in the American stuff, it's either like you have kissing, no tongues, or it's full on.
Yeah, but I suppose in general, the kind of
like media for like teens at the time probably was very conservative anyway. Yes. Regardless of what the teens themselves' actual attitude was.
True.
It was probably very like, don't do it, you'll die, or get hurt, or both.
That's true. And also, I mean, bear in mind, obviously, because I'm, you know, very, very old. So I was first to I was turned 16 in 1991. And I mean, condoms, you could barely buy. I think that was around the time, I think it was 1993 was the first time you could buy condoms in like shops that weren't chemists.
Yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
There was the famous case where the Virgin Megastore in the middle of Dublin got like charged with having condoms over the counter, and they won. But that meant by the time I started college, like later that year, there was a condom machine in the loo. Like it was completely standard. But yes, it truly was a different time. But not in California. You can buy those babies like anywhere. So this is part of the interesting social element of this podcast, that we all get to compare notes.
That's it. Yeah, true. Yeah, no, because like, yeah, it definitely would have been unusual at 16 for to know anyone who had had sex with their boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah,
I feel like there might have been like one girl in school that knew, and it was like, oh my god, did it with her boyfriend.
Or like, you know, they've actually like
like it wasn't like a big news if it got out that someone did.
The only time you really also knew about it is if somebody got pregnant. It didn't happen that often. Like, I think the whole time I was in school, one girl got pregnant.
Yeah, there was definitely one girl. She was in the year below me, though. But yeah, it was occasional, but not like rampant or anything.
Yeah. And there was actually, my school did, God, this does sound like we were in school in sort of Victorian time. Like, there was a school, another, you know, convent school in North Dublin, where a girl got kicked out for being pregnant in fifth year. And she went to my school, because my school was very liberal, like it was convent school technically.
Yeah.
Technically, there were like two nuns still who weren't
knocking around. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they admitted, they accepted her. And she was in my year for like this fifth, maybe it was just sixth year. So she would have been 17. Mm. But I don't think that would have been unusual then, that girls would have been kicked out of a school, would have, you know, full on really strict Catholic school would have said, you cannot darken our doors. Mm-hmm. So
that's the thing, because they pretty much, well, were, and in a lot of cases still are, like Catholic schools. Sort of like run by an order of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. And these days they're almost all in name only, because there literally aren't enough nuns of teaching it. In fact, there's barely any nuns who are below retirement age. And like, I was in school 35 years ago, and there were literally three nuns teaching the entire thing, and they were like about 60. So this has been coming for a long time. But yeah, they still do technically run the schools.
Yeah, they'd be on the board or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, at the age of like 110.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Still hanging in there.
But yes, we do like comparing notes with you, our listeners from around the world. So do continue to share your thoughts. I mean, did you have bad boys in your school who just walked around stomping and being fancied by everybody?
Being suspected of burning down their family's yachts and killing their parents.
Yeah, that was the thing you did not have in a single sex school. But I think feeling my school was very boring on many levels in comparison.
Well, I went to a mixed school, and it still feels very boring compared to Sweden.
Did you have bad boys walking around in slow motion?
There were definitely some bad boys. I don't know about the slow motion though. Yeah. And I would have been too scared of them probably to pay that much attention. Like, oh God, you brought a screwdriver to school. That's bad news.
Specificity of that is just...
Yeah, apparently he was going to stab a guy with it. Anyway, it was fine. Oh,
that rings so true. That's the sort of thing that gets, you know, rumours go around. Yeah, yeah. 25 years. Like, no, I heard he bought like... a screwdriver one day. People are going to be still telling that story at his wedding or his funeral. Well, small town and city and Californian listeners, thank you so much, our Pi Beta Alpha siblings, for joining us in the clubhouse once again. And of course, for supporting the show, which we really, really, really appreciate.
We really do. Thank you so much. We kind of started this thinking, you know, maybe 10 people might be willing to give us a few quid, but really, we never would have expected that this has gone as big as it did. Because I think it is going pretty well. Like, and we're just so delighted that there actually is a lovely little community of you that come into the clubhouse with us every 2 weeks, and we love it, and we love you guys for the support. We really appreciate you.
We do, and we will see you, of course, in the main feed next week, where we are finally starting a new book in the cheerleading trilogy.
We've been so confused doing like two part twos, one after the other, of two different books. We don't know whether we're coming or going. So now it's like, right, a clean start, kind of, because it's also the third book in the cheerleading trilogy. But, you know, it'll be fine.
And you know what's after that? Death Valley.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
I think that's only a two-parter as well.
I think so, too. Yeah.
So, but don't worry, we've got one more cheerleading adventure to go, and we will see you in the main feed to discuss V for Victory next week.
Oh, I'm excited.
I cannot wait. I cannot remember how it all plays out. So
I've never read these ones, so I have no idea what's coming. I'm like having a great time here.
I have read it, but it's so long, so long ago that I remember sort of vague details and like there being some cheerleading camp or something. But that's literally it. So it's all going to come as a surprise. They're all going to be out of Sweet Valley. That's all I know.
Okay. I'm okay with that when we've been in Sweet Valley for a while. Because remember, there was a whole like stretch of books there where they were nowhere near the school. And it was like, can we please just go back to school for a little bit?
When we went back to, like, officially they were in term time in the tail end of the Jeremy saga of the Halloween festivities. It felt like they were never doing school stuff.
No. And it's nice to have the kind of the grounding. element of the school. I say that like it's not the most ridiculous educational facility in the world, but yeah, I do like it when they're knocking around school. So it is nice then if there's something established and now they're all kind of on the loose somewhere else. That can be fun too. So yeah,
well, I am just looking at the list I opened earlier to check the dates of the Sweet Valley books, and so we've got the two-part Death Valley series, and then we have a mini series I have not read. Jessica the Genius is the first one, and it obviously coincided this year or around this time SVU launched, because this trilogy involves Jessica and Elizabeth going to stay with Stephen at SVU.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but after that, we've got the school wars, the high school wars.
Oh, shit.
That is one of the absolutely the best. I recapped this for One Bruce One on LiveJournal like 20 years ago. So I actually have a strong memory of it.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds good. So yeah, it'll probably be like next year when we're talking at the rate we're going, but I look forward to it.
Oh, definitely. We've got four books between now and then.
Okay.
So probably this year, just about.
Your Christmas episodes will be about the high school war.
My main memory of it is that there is some ridiculous like graffiti that's like Palisades, you know, babies per like humans or something stupid. Like their trash talking game is spectacularly terrible.
It's always been shit though. Oh, this is great. I look forward to the terrible tags on spray painted on walls. It's going to be great.
So don't worry, listeners. I know, you know, after Nora and Margot, it feels like you might feel like you have nothing to look forward to, but you do.
We've got the treasure of Death Valley and them being chased by convicts through, I don't know, a state park. It's going to be great.
Then we've got the high school wars. We've got SVU. We've got the vampire.
I can't fucking wait to get into the vampire of it all.
So there is so much to look forward to, and we are very, very happy that you are supporting us through it all in all this chaos.
Yeah, helping us make sense of it, because you really do.
So we will see you in the main feed next week before, as we cheer together, for victory. But we'll see you back in the clubhouse in 2 weeks, where we find out what happens when Devon challenges Todd to be a drag king.
Oh, Okay.
I think we're going to be a bit disappointed by that. But oh, anyway.
This is going to be car racing.
Yes.
Oh, boo.
But write your alternative fan fiction right now, listeners.
We know it'll be better.
We'll see you then, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.